Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Delia Owens, whose novel Where the Crawdads Sing is a bestseller and available everywhere your books are sold. The story is set in the 1950s and focuses on Kaya, a 10-year-old who's abandoned by both parents eventually and has to fend for herself in the North Carolina marshes. As an adult, she's sucked into a murder investigation when one of her acquaintances dies. Small town drama. I flat out love this book. I fell in love with it when I saw the title, and just as I read it, I just couldn't put it down. Delia, 10 years in the making was this novel. The title, Where the Crawdads Sing, captured me right off the bat. Where did that title come from?
Oh, well, thank you for liking that title. When I was a young girl growing up in South Georgia, my mother used to say she always encouraged me to go as far into the woods as I could go. She was always telling me to get outside and go have an adventure. And she would say to me, go way out yonder where the crawdads sing. And the whole meaning of it is that she wanted me to get out there where you could experience nature the way it always was, to hopefully see a little fox or to see some deer and to see them behaving as they had in the wild.
And I'm in Iowa, so we're landlocked here. Crawdads, they're like a little lobster, right?
Right. It's the same order. They're crustaceans, but they're more like, they look sort of like very small shrimp.
And they don't actually sing.
No, they do not sing, but that's sort of the point of the whole thing. The story, as you said, is about a young girl, and she has to learn how to survive on her own. And the point of the title is that if you get far enough into the wilderness all by yourself, and it's quiet, and it's just you with nature, you will hear the crawdads sing. Because what? Nature has so much to teach us. I studied wildlife in Africa for 23 years, and I learned one of the things that impressed me the most is how we still behave today in so many ways like wild animals, and it made me realize that a lot of the behavior patterns that we have today came from how we behaved on the savannas back when we were evolving. We had to behave certain ways to survive, and we still have a lot of those behavior patterns today. And if we study nature, if we get out into nature, we can see why other animals are behaving that way. It helps us understand who we are.
You know, this book is set in North Carolina's Outer Banks. Can you kind of describe that area of the country?
The book is set in the wild coastal marshes, and they are actually on the inland, inside of the Outer Banks. They're on they hug along the coast of North Carolina. They're very wild and free. And I chose this setting. It's marsh. It's beautiful, beautiful waterways that and rivulets and canals and channels that wind through this tall grass that actually grows in the water. And then it goes into beautiful forest. So it's very wild, and in some places within the marsh, you'll find real swamp areas, which are darker and quieter. I chose this habitat because, for two reasons, for poetic reasons and for practical reasons. It had to be an environment that a little girl really could grow up on her own. And there really is food lying around. There are mussels and oysters, and she knew how to fish. So I wanted the story to be realistic. I wanted people to believe a young girl could grow up mostly alone in that habitat. So that it's a temperate climate. She had a little shack. She knew how to fish. So it was realistic that she could live there. Also, for poetic reasons, I chose this habitat because there is a difference between the swamp and the marsh. And part of this story is how I feel like in life we almost always end up one time or the other in a swamp. And this story is about how to get out of the dark places back into the light.
Well, you described the marsh as it became the little girl's mother. And that's obvious to those of us who read the book, read the narration. I mean, we get the symbolism there. Does she realize it at the time, though?
Oh, that's a good question, Brian. I don't know that she... I think she does, absolutely, during her lifetime. I doubt when she was 6 years old it really occurred to her that that's what was happening. But, yes, she did realize that over her life, absolutely. I mean, and she understood the value of it. And I think as we read the story, we understand the value of it as well.
I know fiction a lot of times requires a whole bunch of truth to make it work, and as I'm reading your descriptions, and you've written about nature, so this isn't anything new to you, but I could almost smell the sweet grass in North Carolina. I could feel the moisture. How did you portray the marsh so accurately and capture that in word?
Well, thanks to my mother again, I used to actually go canoe camping with my mother, just my mother and I, in some of the marshy areas of South Georgia. So I grew up, as my mother encouraged me to do, I grew up in the woods and in the marshy areas. I know them very well. And I still, to this day, stay outside as much as I can. So to me, that all came natural. It was just has been my life to live outside and to smell the grasses and feel the mud between my toes.
You know, as I read this book, it alternates between two distinct time periods. You've got the girl as a girl and the girl as an adult. But when you write this, I mean, it took you over the course of 10 years, flipping back and forth between these time periods, how much of an editing nightmare is that for you?
You're right. It was the writing it and the two time periods was not that difficult. Going back and doing the editing of that was a nightmare because if you decided to change, it's like dominoes. If you decide to change one particular episode, move it from here to there, there goes the whole stack. And it was truly difficult, but, you know, it was fun in a way. It was like a huge 100,000 word puzzle. It was just a big puzzle to put together, but I actually enjoyed that part.
I'm chatting with Delia Owens about her book, Where the Crawdads Sing. It's a New York Times bestseller. This shot up right away as far as sales go. I think it surprised everybody in the literary world. How did you take the news when you all of a sudden you sold like 300,000 books right away?
Oh, it was, all I can tell you is that I am so grateful. And of course, every author hopes that book will do well. They hope, mainly I want to reach people. You want people to read your words and I was surprised, but I'm just so grateful. And every, you know, my publishers, my agent, everybody has been so great about helping it. I have so many fans now who contact me, and I almost can't believe it. It still seems like a dream.
You know, you wrote some of these words more than 10 years ago, obviously, because this book was 10 years in the making, and then you've got to edit it and such. But when you have when you have a book that part of it is written 10 years ago, does your voice as a narrator change throughout that time? And did you notice yourself growing as a fiction writer?
I definitely grew as a fiction writer, yes. I'm almost embarrassed about the 10-year thing, but that's not like I was working on it every day. That wasn't my day job. I got up at 4:30 in the morning every morning to write on this book because I was doing other things. I was still doing, you know, I did research in Africa for years. I still had a project going there, and so this was a sideline for me. Also, for several years, I would put it away. I would get discouraged and say, "Oh, this is never going anywhere," and I put it in a box and put it away. And I did that several times, so I don't know how many years I actually worked on it, but it was over a period of 10 years that I was working on and off. And I did grow during that time, and I could feel myself growing as a fiction writer. I could feel my voice coming out and being stronger, and it was fun.
You know, the whole idea of abandonment is present throughout the book, and I think of abandonment, and then I think of also solitude. How do those two differ from your perspective?
I think they differ a lot. I lived a life of solitude, and that was one reason I wanted to write this book, because I think being alone does affect a person deeply. But abandonment is a rejection. It's a form of discrimination and rejection, and that is a big part of what this book is about as well, is is how that affects our behavior. And again, when we are discriminated against or abandoned, we do behave differently. And one of the questions in the book that was very important for Kaya was, did the people in the village who discriminated against her, did they discriminate against her because she was different? Or was she different because they discriminated against her? And this happens every day in our lives, every day. I came back from Africa feeling lonely and come back to find that my friends living in the cities and my friends who are have other friends that go to the gym, a lot of people feel lonely and rejected from one reason or another. So it's something that a lot of us have to deal with.
Well, Kaya is known as a marsh kid. Is that another word for poor kids?
The marsh girl is what she was called, and yes, it was a slang. It was another form of rejection, another form of bullying by the local people to call her a name.
I did appreciate the scene where she goes to school and the teacher's asking questions, and she makes the comment through the narrator that, "I thought I came here to learn from you, not the other way around." That's kind of an advanced thought for a child who hasn't had any formal education, right?
I guess. Yes, but, you know, I'm always amazed when I'm around children, the things that they say that you think, oh, that's so advanced for their age, but I think that children do have thoughts like that that are quite amazing. But And it turns out that was very true. She ended up being more educated than any of them.
And I'm not going to spoil the ending, but did you know the ending and then work toward it from the beginning?
The ending was the reason I decided to write this book. I came up with the ending, and I just loved the idea of that ending, and all the clues that would lead to it were in my mind, and so that I weaved, you know, obviously I didn't write backwards, but in my mind I developed the story from the ending to the beginning, and then I started writing from the beginning. But it's a very special ending.
So did you have to jot that ending down just so you didn't forget any of the details?
No, I do jot things down a lot. I sleep with a little notepad in my bed with a flashlight and a pen so I can wake up for the night and write and jot things down. But that ending is not something you forget.
I agree with you there. The book is Where the Crawdads Sing. It's by Delia Owens. It spent some time at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. It's on bestsellers on Amazon and New York Times. Just go check it out. You won't be disappointed in this book. Delia, fantastic offering here, and I dare say it's a debut novel, but it certainly didn't feel like that. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
You get what I'm looking for. We'll go down to the Crawdads.